I have no idea what's going to happen here. It's the news, according to me. It's the news, according to me. There we go. That's more like it. There. That wasn't even what I was talking about.
Wow.
It is Wednesday, June... June. The year's half over. January 8th, 10:34 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. I am at the home studio. I had a wacky weekend week, 4 days of work. It was nuts. I was supposed to be in Toronto, Canada on Sunday night. I was not in Toronto, Canada on Sunday night. I was in Chicago. I did make it to Raleigh, Durham. I guess I was in Raleigh, not Durham. I was in Raleigh. And that was on Saturday night. Actually, all day Saturday, well, pretty much all day. The next day was all kind of messed up. I ended up back in Chicago, and I stayed there till when was it? A couple days ago. Anyway, got back yesterday. Ended up going through Nashville. Was in Nashville for a little while, but that's you know, a whole other story, right? By the way, the Nashville airport. If you're looking for something to eat, you might want to route yourself through Nashville. By the way, Nashville is a huge Southwest airlines. They have a huge presence there in Nashville. It's increasing. I don't think they've made any announcements about it. It's like one of those little sleeper places that nobody knows how big they're getting there. But I think they've taken over about half the airport there. But there are restaurants everywhere you look, and just about all of them have live performances because everybody's looking for a job down there, singing music, playing music. Everybody's looking to be discovered down there. It's just whenever I fly to Nashville, I always look around the terminal to see who's carrying a guitar, possible guitar case going to Nashville. They never come back. I never see, ever see anybody leaving Nashville with a guitar case because they've probably sold it to get a ticket out of town. Or to buy food, or they're living on the streets. One of the two. It's just, you never, we call it Nash Vegas. There's more hearts have been broken there than, people go down there, they got the starry look in their face and their eyes. Like, I'm a musician. I'm going to go to Nashville. I'm going to make it big and I'm going to get discovered. So it's almost worse than Hollywood. And of course, you never see them coming back out of Nashville and you never hear from them again. Not sure what happens to them. It's like a void. But there are so many restaurants in Nashville Airport. That's my point. There's so many restaurants there, including Chick-fil-A, which I have. Of course, I had to run over to Chick-fil-A. The area I was going through wasn't in that gate even. I was like over in the Delta Gate or Charlie Gate, whatever it was. It's over at the root of the Alpha Gate, so I had to go over there. Get it. I ran over there, ran back, barely made my flight. But it was worth it at the number 5 grilled chicken. No pickle. I don't know if they put a pickle on a grilled chicken. Of course, the pièce de résistance was the sweet tea I got. Now, I also got sweet tea on my way home. So the sweet tea that I have right here is not, it's from Chick-fil-A, but it's not from Nashville. It's been a little bit watered down. I put away a little bit too much ice in there. I recharged it with some ice and it didn't get it all drank. And so now it's kind of watered down. So it's not the best in the world. But I do have my little chai here in my little insulated cup. I had to go out to breakfast with some guys today, this morning. And that was good. That was good. That was a good time. I haven't done that since like November. Caught up with these guys and it was kind of good. Some sailing buddies of mine. I have in my chai cup here, just got my regular chai with my cinnamon creamer. Not Cinnabon, cinnamon. But anyway, a few things happened since my last show of last week. We have, first of all, January 6th came and went. I was going to play some audio of Kamala, she's, you know, oversaw the and certified the election that she lost. First time that's ever happened in this country, by the way. A lot of firsts under this whole Trump thing. And apparently the first time a sitting vice president has ever overseen an election loss in this country. And I have to hand it to her. I will hand it to her this. That took a lot of guts. It took a lot of courage. I'm not sure I could have done it. I could have done it because I don't care. But it's one of those things where it's, I think she was so invested in it. I don't know that I've ever been in a situation like that where I've been invested in something I had to turn around. I don't know. But maybe I have. I've been in situations where I was, didn't want to be in, let's put it that way. I think that's the situation she was in. She was in a situation she didn't want to be in. However, I think it was, you know, she wanted to do it, I think, to make a point that she was strong enough to do it. However, I don't know if she was on some kind of medication or whatever was going on with her. Because in her voice, your voice doesn't get past the medication typically. However, she was charged up, whether she was on Ritalin or whatever she was on. Her voice did not hide the fact that she was emotionally falling apart inside. What I noticed was someone who was, if you asked her, if she answered you honestly, I believe she would say that it was an extremely surreal experience for her to do that. And it was almost like, it was probably almost like an out-of-body experience for her, because she was probably, it was very surreal, very, almost as if she was watching it happen and couldn't believe she was in this situation. It was, just by listening to her voice, I got all that from her voice. That's just what I picked up. I think that it affected her a lot deeper than what she was letting on. That's just my opinion. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a financial counselor. I'm just a voice guy. So that's what my theory is. Speaking of voices, there's something I've got to get off my chest because I'm a little bit concerned. I heard Trump speak ever since he's been shot. This is the thing that concerns me. His voice has changed since that day. What I'm hearing now is a gradual and consistent degradation of his voice. It's a diminishing thing happening, and I'm concerned about that. His speech is not as good as it was. I don't know what that's about. I don't know if anyone's talking about it or not. I'm probably the only one that's talking about it, but it concerns me. And it could be that what I heard the other day, it could be just, you know, the tiredness of everything that's happened up until this point. I mean, he was going like crazy on the campaign trail. And of course I'm sure he's working even twice as hard now trying to put the cabinet together and get everything done that he's got to get done. I'm sure there is a flurry of activity happening around the Trump administration that it goes beyond belief. You would not believe the amount of things that are happening every day. Every day. Around that man and around everything. He's being asked a million questions because everything needs to be put into place. And it's just a whirlwind of activity. Everyone's, pulling at him to try to get him to, get questions about everything. Everything from, you know, what color do you want your drapes? What color, you know, how do you want this done? How do you want that done? Who's going to be this? Who's going to be that? People are vying for positions. know, just the multitude of things that are happening there are just out of control. So continue to pray, you know, for Donald Trump, that he has energy, that he has the acuity, the ability. Now, some people who've been operating in this kind of mode most of their life can kind of go on autopilot and kind of get all these things done. They can just kind of go from one thing to the next. They can literally multitask. I know some people say multitasking is not a thing. You can't do it. It's a myth. You can't multitask properly and get things done. There are some people who function in this realm of being able to juggle basically many, many things at the same time, because it's just they're just so honed into functioning that way. Now, I have a weird kind of a ADD type thing. I have found ways of working around my ADD, and it doesn't always work really well. I don't function, you know, as focused as some people can do on certain things, but I can get some things done, or at least get them started. Basically, I'm able to understand what helps me stay focused in certain situations. When I'm in a classroom, for instance, I cannot sit just in the class like everybody else and face forward and learn anything. I don't learn best. That's not the way I learn best. I can tell you how I learn the best, how I remember things best. If I'm sitting on the side of the classroom, facing the class, watching the class, I can absorb everything. I don't understand it. I've tried to figure this out. I was going through my real estate I was getting my real estate license at one point in my life. This is where I discovered this it became very clear that this was a huge thing for me. I got to the class, it was raining. Everybody had kind of already gotten there early, and I was there on time, but I wasn't there super early, and most of the seats were taken. But at this one table that was set up perpendicular to the way everybody else was looking, so on the other side of the room, and it was kind of elevated just a little bit, I thought, well, I'll just go over and sit over there. There's plenty of seats there. So I went over there and sat at that table. And that kind of became, you know, every week you'd go to class, and that was kind of, everybody kind of went back to their same seats every week. I aced that class. I absorbed everything. And I felt like I learned more by observing other people taking the class than I did by feeling like I was in the class. I didn't feel like I was in the class. I felt like I was observing the class. Weirdest thing. And I felt like I learned more doing that. Or I learned better. I don't understand that. Whenever I go to a classroom now, whenever I'm in a classroom situation, I have to sit through a thing like that, something that I really want to absorb or need to absorb because there's going to be a test, I typically try to find a place where I can sit and sit sideways at the side of the class and kind of watch the class. Part of that, I think, is that I kind of always wonder what's going on behind me. If I sit in the back, I get too distracted by what's in front of me. If I sit in the front, I always wonder what's going on behind me. You know, I sit in the back, I don't feel as connected. I don't feel like I'm connecting with the teacher. And there's too many things between me and the teacher to, you know, really distract me. But if I can see the whole thing from the side, I feel like I'm not in the class. And it's just a weird thing. I don't know where I'm going with all that, but there you go. So if you have ADD or if you have a child that has ADD, you might want to try that with them and see if it works. I don't understand the principle there. Jordan Peterson could probably tell you all about it. I don't know. I could probably spend a couple of years just trying to figure me out. But the whole thing with Donald Trump and the way he's speaking, it kind of concerns me. I don't know if there's been some kind of function that's happened, you know, neurologically, something's going wrong with him. I'm not sure what's going on there. Hopefully, you know, he makes it through the whole 4 years here in complete cognitive acuity and everything happens, you know, really well. We don't have another Joe Biden on our hands in a couple of years. But the, you know, yeah. Anyway, here we are in the new year. I guess is this the second show of the new year? This is all we have done, I think, so far this year. Is that right? I don't think I've done very many shows. What is this? Today's the 7th or 8th? Today's the 8th. I had a show, a couple shows last week, maybe. There will be a show tomorrow and Friday. And I'm planning on Friday having quite a few sound bites as we go on. I might have some of the stuff about Kamala. But I do want to play some things that have been going on in the media. And one of the things I want to talk about today is and I've said this before, I think I said this on an earlier show, but I really had hoped things would change because there's a change in the nation. There's people have felt this, and I think I can hear people talking about it. There is a difference in this time with Trump winning. And I think winning the popular vote has really taken this thing to a whole different level and a different, very different kind of atmosphere with this whole, with this president's second term. You know, his first term, I think people were kind of not sure about him. The establishment Republicans that were in there, they fought against him from day one. Speaker of the House didn't want to have anything to do with him. Everybody was talking about resigning. They were pushing back on the wall, pushing back on funding, all this kind of stuff that they were doing. I think it surprised. I don't think Donald Trump thought that was going to happen. I don't think to the extent that it did. And then you had all these people in their first term, in the first 2 years, they decided to retire from Congress, which just let the Democrats come right in. And then all we had was impeachment for the next 2 years. Now, I think they're going to try the same play. They only have one playbook. The playbook on the left is orange man bad. Everything he says is crazy and he's dumb and he's going to get us into trouble and he's a racist bigot, Hitler, not Nazi, you know, Hitler-esque guy. He's a fascist. That's all they have. That's the only thing that they have. You know, if they just reported the truth, without the narrative, without the spin all the time, people would go right back to CNN. We'd go right back to listening, and everything would, you know, I think we would have a unified nation again. But they're so concerned about not having power right now that they just can't see it any other way. They have to keep driving down on this crazy rhetoric. That they are just Trump derangement syndrome on steroids. It's just unbelievable. And you got the guys like Zuckerberg. Zuckerberg comes out and says, we're not going to have our fact checkers anymore. We're just going to have community notes. You can go ahead and call people names and do things. We're just going to have community. What? When did this happen? Now, one of the interesting things, Mark Zuckerberg got involved in jiu-jitsu. I think it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And what's very interesting about this is that his attitudes are changing. Like when he saw Trump get shot, and he said, "I saw Trump get shot in the face," and that was, you know, it made an impression on him. You know, when Trump got up and said, "Fight, fight, fight," because I think in the process of, you know, just going out and working out is one thing. If when you're wrestling and you're challenging another human being to, you know, that kind of discipline, that kind of work and workout, when you're pitting that yourself against someone else and you're realizing just how brutal that kind of training can be, something changes inside of you. Most MMA fighters, most people involved in martial arts, martial means warlike arts of fighting. It is a discipline. And you don't necessarily learn how to fight so you can win fights. You learn how to fight so you don't have to get into fights. There's something about that. There's a confidence that you have that you know you can take the other person's face off. And you know how painful it's going to be for both of you. It's not just because you win a fight. We see these people, you know, in the movies, you know, the good guy, you know, somebody challenges this kid and he's got, he knows karate. Next thing you know, boom, 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 he knocks a guy out. I guarantee you, if whatever you struck that guy with is going to be hurt, it's going to be in pain. Your knuckles are going to hurt. Your forearms, your elbows, whatever it is that you struck that guy with, you're not walking away unscathed. I would rather walk away unscathed. But I know that if I have to, but it's just not going to be fun for either one of us, okay? So I'd rather just avoid the whole thing if I can. And I think that that's, it's interesting that people who are involved in those kinds of disciplines tend to become a lot more libertarian, a little bit more conservative in their values. And they become much more, or I should say much less collectivist, surprisingly enough. So, as we go through this processes of seeing people kind of ditching this whole woke stuff and all of the monitoring. Now, the pendulum could swing in a very bad way, way too far to the other side. I'm just going to say that. But because there needs to be a balance in this thing. But at the same time, it has gone completely off the rails on one side. So it's interesting to see how this is going to pan out and how like people like Chinky. I don't trust any of these people. Matt Walsh recently came out with a show where he said, you know, I'm not going to trust any of these people until they come out and announce a formal apology and say what they said wrong, and they do this whole thing where they make amends and they not just they come out and say, oh, let's be friends now. But they actually come out and say, I was wrong. This is what I said. This is what I did wrong. And I want to learn more about this before I start speaking up on it anymore. Because they all of a sudden, these people on the left who are wrong, this is what Matt Walsh said. He said people were wrong for 20 years, and now all of a sudden they're coming out saying that they're going to be an influencer in the other direction. Well, no, maybe you need to understand. Maybe you need to get an education. You were wrong about all these things for so long. How can you just all of a sudden flip the switch and you're going to be right now? You spent 20 years being wrong. Maybe you need to spend a little time studying before we're going to just, you know, put you in a place of authority again and have you speaking authoritatively. But that's not what happens, of course. They got this audience, and of course they're going through this process of, you know, Cenk Uygur and all his cohorts. And they've got all these other people that are just seem to be coming around to the conservative thought, to the centrists at least, to, you know, kind of leaving the woke hysteria. But I don't know. I don't know how it's going to pan out. I'm not sure how it's going to work. I do see, though, and I want to get back to this. I do believe that there's a huge amount of momentum heading in the right direction. Now, having said that, the left is still, those who are hardcore leftists and who are, of course, they're the wackadoodle Trump derangement syndrome commentators and everybody else that's out there doing their thing. I am extremely concerned about these people. They are continuing to double down on this whole thing. They're doubling down on Orange Man Bad. You know, Trump is, you know, he's out of control. He's going to buy Greenland. He's talking about using the military to go in and take Greenland away. He's going to take the Panama Canal by force. He's That's not what he's saying. But that's, of course, that's all they can say, because they're twisting his comments. They have not learned a thing. And I'm not, you know, I'm tired of, I used to talk to my liberal friends and say, you know, you guys realize why you lost, and you guys realize what happened here. Trying to talk some sense into them and say, hey, the American people aren't buying this anymore. You guys have been lying and lying and lying, and they're not going to buy this anymore. I'm tired of giving them the advice. You know, if they can't learn by their own mistakes, then they're not going to learn by me talking to them and pointing out their mistakes. They're just going to get that much worse. So I'm done with that. I'm done with it. I can't cause somebody to open up their eyes, and you know, I can't. All I can do is continue to talk about the truth and talk about what's happening and talk about and pointing out, you know, the best way to discuss these things with people. And I guess when you run into your liberal friends, the best thing to do is to ask them questions. Just ask them questions. And right away, you'll find out answers. He's a convicted felon. He's got 34 federal indictments against him. He's a convicted felon. Really, what was the felony he committed? I don't know. Okay, then this conversation's over. You don't know what you're talking about. Name one of the indictments.
There's 34 of them. I can't remember all 34.
Can you remember one of them? No, they can't ever answer that question. Just when you start pinning them down on actually specific answers to these talking points, these narratives, this hyperbole that they have heard all day long on CNN and MSNBC, they have no way of responding to you. They don't know what to say. They can't have a normal conversation. So we'll see what happens here. Jamie Rask, Dan Goldman is still out there yakking away. I just heard a press briefing the other day, because the January 6th thing was about the January 6th memorial, and somebody was being asked some questions. I think one of the people who was on the committee. And they said something about, what do you think the president, you know, the president says there was nobody that was armed, wasn't an armed insurrection. And this guy goes on, and I'm hoping to have this recorded, this audio for you tomorrow, because this is very telling. He goes on and on about how there were AR-15s and AR blah, 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 blah. And he goes on this whole big long spiel about the guns that were there that day. And guns were in the Capitol that day. Well, yeah, of course they were. Someone got shot that day and killed. It wasn't a police officer. In fact, that was a criminal act. Anybody who would have done that, you know, the guy steps up, takes one shot. Nobody else had their guns drawn. There were plenty of other armed guards there in that facility. Apparently, he was the only one who felt threatened. This guy who had all kinds of reprimands for leaving his gun in the bathroom, doing all kinds of stupid things that this guy had done. And he steps up and he's the one who fires a shot and kills somebody. Nearly killing police officers. There were police officers on the other side of that window, by the way, that he shot through. And he walks away scot-free. They almost make him out to be a hero. Got a paid vacation out of it. It's ridiculous. So, hopefully, we are seeing the end of an era of ridiculous rhetoric, hyperbole. But my hopes are for that. However, I just know that the left has no other playbook. They have no other way to go with this thing, and I don't think that they're going to all of a sudden change their spots. So we'll just leave it at that. Now, let's talk about something else. I want to get into this a little bit about the economy. We are headed for a very, I think, an interesting economic place. I think that there's going to be, personally, I think there's going to be what they call in the markets, a resistance. Now, I'm not a market analyst. I'm not a expert in stocks and bonds and options and all that kind of stuff. I'm just a guy who talks of opinions. So anything you do on your own. You know, do your own research and due diligence and all that stuff that they always say. You know, the old disclaimers. You know, don't take my advice for anything. I'm just making observations here and giving you my opinions. I think the markets are going to see at some point here in the near future. I think we're going to see a downturn. Certainly, at some point during the next 4 years, we will see a downturn of some sort. I think that markets have been so resistant in the last couple of years. They actually kind of have done pretty well. Last year, they actually did pretty good. 2024 was a pretty good year to be in the market in certain stocks, certain industries. I think that the entire market this year is going to go up at some point. I think investing it like from January 1st to December 31st of this year, if you just put a bunch of money, dumped a bunch of money in every stock there was and just waited until the end of the year, I think you're going to see an incredible increase in your portfolio, some more than others. But I think that there's going to be a sell-off prior to that. Now, what does this have to do with our economy? This is a correction. I think that there's going to be some of this inflationary stuff that has happened, and it all boils down to what the price of oil. Speaking of which, there's a theory. It's gaining some traction right now. I guess Corsi was the one that's came out with this book about this. I didn't realize he wrote this book about oil and where oil actually comes from and its actual origins and how it actually, how the earth produces oil. Everybody's told it's dinosaurs, It's all dinosaurs. There's not enough dinosaurs. Okay. There weren't enough dinosaurs as we think of them as in the big beasts, the lizard like dinosaur type things. There were not enough of those who died over the billions of years of whatever to create this oil field, this amount of oil. Now, the other side of it is so I hear that all the time. Now, however, scientists will step up and say, oh, no, that's not what we learned in college. What we learned is it's biological debris from the oceans. It's the biological debris from oceans. So it's the organic material, microscopic as well as, small plankton and everything else that dies, rots and gets, eventually becomes oil after billions of years. Well, this is probably not true. To some extent, that's how coal is found. That's how coal is made. Trees crushed, compressed and done all the whole thing and kind of fossilized over time and becomes coal. It's like a slow burn process. It's like a vitrified tree type thing. It becomes, I don't know if that's the right term to use, but it becomes coal. It's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about oil and gas, methane, the natural gas. There is huge research, bona fide, qualified, certified research now that says oil is, what do they call it? Analogic, whatever it is. It is not from biological material. And the earth makes oil, like the oil fields. There's a really good report on this. I'm trying to find out I heard it last night, and I was going to have the link for it and tell you where to find this report, who did the report. Actually, I could probably look it up right here. This is what it is. It's something that this little show is called, like AI, whatever, or something. What was it called? Let me look at my history. It's going to be my history because it wasn't that long ago I listened to it. Let's see here. Oh, here we go. It's JD's Electric Collection, and it's called Two. T-W-O, AIs, so it's capital A, capital I, apostrophe S, discuss the great conspiracy on the origins of oil. It is Jerome Corsi wrote a book. It's on Amazon. And it is it's called The Great Oil Conspiracy by Jerome Corsi. So it's this interesting take on the whole thing of oil and how it actually is created. And it's just not what we think. And if this is the case, this changes everything. First of all, if it is a process that how the earth creates oil, we can create oil, but there's enough oil reserves everywhere that it would change the geopolitical landscape. It changes everything. And it is, you know, of course, there's some big oil interests and there's all kinds of things that are about this whole thing. And some of the reasons that the oil fields are actually refilling much quicker than they thought that they would is because of this very concept. So, needless to say, I think it's very interesting. But we're talking about drill, baby, drill, this whole thing now. Supposedly, Joe Biden there's more drilling going on now. There's more oil being produced now than there ever was. It's different. Oil production is different than oil drilling. We have to have futures because everything's based on futures. So they keep talking about that all through the election season. Well, there's more oil production now than there was during the Trump administration. It's not just oil, it's gas as well, and it's all based on futures and drilling. So now he banned drilling on all of the U.S. coastlines. Was it 900 billion, whatever it was, 39 billion acres, whatever it was that the Biden administration banned on his way out the door. He's banning, which of course he knows that Trump's going to step back in the office or back in office, and he's going to reverse that right away. It's just weird things that this administration is doing on their way out the door. Speaking of on their way out the door, one of the things that they are doing that's rather alarming. There was a report. I think there was Joseph Watson. He had a report. Let's see if I can find it. I don't see it here. Real handy. It's not anything real handy, super handy. About the, I think it was Project Veritas. It was kind of a Project Veritas type style of expose where they found this guy. This guy's talking to this guy in the bar. Of course, the guy's had a few drinks and he's, works for the administration, and what's happening here is this guy starts spilling over and blabbing about how they use NGOs, these non-government organizations who are nonprofit organizations. Most of them are shell companies. Many of them are shell companies. They'll approve something for like $8 billion. Now, there's a clip of Pete Buttigieg. I'd like to get this. I'd like to get that audio as well put together for you for tomorrow. Pete Buttigieg is being interviewed, and he's being asked about the president. Biden had this ambitious initiative. He needed, I think, what was it? Was it eight billion or 30 billion? I can't remember how much it was. Billions of dollars that they approved for putting 500,000 charging stations. Now, I got a lot of problems with this. First of all, 500,000 charging stations across the United States by the end of the decade, so by 2030. 500,000. Well, the money's gone. The money's out there. It's already been spent. They have 8 of them made so far. They have 5 years left. Less now. Less than 5 years. We're supposed to have 500,000 of them across the United States. That's 100,000 a year. That's 10,000 per state. Do you see them building any in your backyard? You know this stuff's going to take a couple of years to build one, right? To put it all in. Infrastructure, wiring, all the other things. Pouring the concrete, all the stuff that has to happen. Thousands of them. There's a couple issues I have with this whole thing. First of all, it ain't going to happen. They're not going to get it done for another 10 years after that. And it's going to cost another $27 billion and another who knows how long it'll take them. It's just the way this stuff always works this way. It always takes three times longer and costs three times more. Always. This is Chicago politics, by the way. This is the way they've been doing it in Chicago since the 1960s. $1 million project turns into a $3 million project, and the next thing you know, it's instead of being 1 year, it's 3 years, 4 years, and of course, it just has overruns, and it keeps going. Well, you know, the cost of doing it is going up. Ran into that. We have to have overruns. That's all approved, and it's all in the it's in the approval right off the bat. Of course, the contractors take advantage of that. They know it. They'll bid. Of course, the contractors that know that, they'll bid for a contract that says we can do this for $1 million and do it in 1 year. And the board says, oh, look, we can do it in $1 million in 1 year. Look, we're going to vote for this guy because he's undercutting. He's selling. He's half the price this other guy is. Well, what they don't tell you is within the contract is allowances for overruns and extensions. The other guy didn't have. Next thing you know, it's taken 3 years and it's costing $3 million. Or four or five million. Or the second year, it's 3 million. And the third year, it's 6 million. This is the kind of thing you do all the time. This is all built into the cake. You'll find it in almost every municipality, almost everything. This happened in my local town. I remember when I was going, even in high school, we had this little thing here called the Six Span Bridge. The Johnson Street Bridge as well. A contractor came in, took the money from the city. We're going to get it done. We're going to get this project done. They walked off with the money, went bankrupt, walked away. Lawsuits flying. Nobody wanted anything out of that. Lawyers probably made a lot of money. So another contractor steps in and says, well, we'll take care of this for you. We don't realize how you guys have been ripped off. We'll take care of this. We got this. Oh, we'll fix all this up for you for, you know, same price. They walked off. Two of them walked off, did that. A good friend of mine who I went to high school with, he was an engineer on that project for the city. When he stepped in, they finished it. They fixed it and they finished it. It took about 12 years. That thing was a mess. From beginning to end, the thing was a mess. For 12 years. It was within a couple of years after he stepped in, they got it fixed. It was disgusting. It was a disgusting time for the city. The whole project was just a mess. This happens in municipalities. It happens in counties. It happens in states. And it happens especially at the federal level. What's happening right now is they have all these NGOs, all these not-for-profits, and this guy's confessing, admitting that they have several billion dollars they've got to get flushed out of the system before January 20th because Trump's going to put an end to it. He's going to stop this stuff. Well, these nonprofits that all this money is going to, it's for things like, he was talking about things for environmental issues, it was environmental agencies. So the environmental agency needs to give money to these private organizations who can do more with it. All that money is going to be gone if Trump steps into office. So they're funneling off, which is what they do anyway. They funnel it off on into these NGOs, these non-government organizations, with the sole purpose of those non-government organizations then funneling money back to PAC groups and everything else. They give money one way or another. They can have somebody on staff. And the way they get around this, well, a nonprofit can't give money, can't donate to a political fund. Oh, yes, it can, first of all. Secondly, if it's set up as a charitable nation or some other kind of organization that it supposedly can't do that, what you do is you put a bunch of people on in management who make ridiculous amounts of money for the sole reason of, well, I make $2 million a year and $1 million of that's going to go back to the campaign. That's how this works. It's called money laundering. And that's what they're doing. That's the definition of money laundering. You're making it look like money's going someplace and then it comes back to you and you're just funneling the money from the government back into your coffers. This is no different than a mafia selling drugs, using that money to start a laundromat or a mattress company claiming to sell mattresses. We sold a bunch of mattresses for cash. And that's how we got this cash here now. Or some kind of service industry where they can say, we collected all this cash here for all this service we did. Pay taxes on it, then you're done. It's legitimate money all of a sudden. That's where we got the money. We didn't get it from selling drugs. The way these PAC groups got money was, well, we got donations from these organizations out here. Oh, we happen to be giving money to them, but we got this money from organizations out here. Or a spinoff organization from that organization. Or somebody who worked for that organization. That's what's happening. So these billions of dollars now are going to be flushed out very quickly. And because they got to get them out of their hands, out of the coffers, out of the control of these organizations, the agencies, because they know that Trump's got a clean house, and Doge is probably going to step in and stop a lot of this, hopefully stop a lot of this stuff. Between lobbyists and the NGOs, we are being bilked every day to the tune of billions of dollars. And it has got to stop. It's no wonder we're racking up trillions of dollars of debt every year. It's got to stop. The party is over. And I think they know it. And they're the ones, the elites are running scared. They don't know what to do at this point. They're not sure what's going to happen with them and what's going to happen with their money and funding and their organizations and their whole machine. They're not sure. But hopefully we can have some transparency, have some way of showing how ridiculous some of the spending is. Now, some of these studies, Rand Paul always does this thing, some of these studies, they're giving cocaine to squirrels to see what their mating habits turn into. Just things like that. You know that $8 million for that, it's not going to that. Some guy writes up a fake report and then pockets half the money and gives the other half back to a PAC group. That's the kind of stuff that's been going on for years. It's got to stop. It's just ridiculous. We're funding our own demise is what's happening here. They're bilking us. Anyway, tomorrow, hopefully I will have some actual audio for you and hopefully have a show from the worldwide headquarters, either tomorrow or Friday, probably tomorrow, actually. But God bless. Have a great rest of your day. See ya.